Velkommen til København Vineyards podcast. Vi er glade for, at du lytter med, og vi håber, at du vil blive inspireret, opmuntret og udfordret i din tro og i dit liv, hvor du end er. God fornøjelse.
Thank you so much for your welcome. And I didn't mention the fact that we have 5 grandchildren, ranging from 9 to about 9 months. All 5 of which are delicious, and we have a cupboard. We live on a farm, and the grandchildren know that there is a cupboard stocked with chocolate, which makes us very popular indeed. We buy their favor and affection shamelessly with Maltesers. I've been to Denmark and to this church, honestly, more times than I can remember over the years. And it's a delight to be back. Eleanor sends her love. And is that better? There we go. That's better. Eleanor sends her love. And the truth is, she and I hold this church in very close to our hearts. We love it, and we love what God is doing through you. And indeed, with the other vineyards in Denmark and Norway and Sweden and Finland. So thank you. Some of you maybe have already guessed why Simon, you know, who is the leader in Denmark and also leads, he and his wife Anna lead the vineyards in Denmark and also the vineyard in Aarhus, which I think was planted from here. The reason we're here, it's no secret, there has been a situation. There is a moment, a bit of a crisis. And I said to your pastors and indeed to Simon, would it be helpful if I jumped on the plane and came to share my ignorance with you very, very generously, which I'm delighted to do. It's unreal to pretend there isn't a crisis at the moment, particularly because it concerns your leader. Do you call him leading pastor or senior pastor of the vineyard here in Copenhagen? Now, let me immediately say that some of you are visiting and you haven't the first idea what's going on and you feel that you've picked a bad Sunday to visit. I hope not. I hope not. First thing to say, as Anna did earlier, you're very, very welcome. And we're delighted you're here. I can let you into a secret, because I'm also a visitor, also being a foreigner, that this is a wonderful church, fantastic church. And God has done and is doing wonderful things here. And so if you're thinking of staying, I urge you to do so. You will not regret it. But you will excuse us if some of what I say is sort of family business. You know, you can always do Sudoku on your, you know, widget phone. Well, you're not the first, and you're not the ever going to be the last of a church that, from time to time, has a difficult patch. A bit like an aeroplane. I flew over from yesterday and was high winds, and you hit turbulence for a time. And that's perfectly normal. Go back to the New Testament. You see it time and again in the New Testament. I sometimes wonder, do you think at any point the Apostle Peter or the Apostle Paul were wondering and saying, hang on, I thought I was going to preach the gospel, lead people to Jesus, get them filled with the Holy Spirit, disciple them and plant churches all over, wherever. I thought that's what I was going to do. And here I am trying to sort out a mess in the church in Corinth or a mess in the church in Ephesus. Or, do you know, do I need to go on? And think how much of the, if they hadn't have done that faithfully, think how much of the New Testament would be absent. So, in God's plan of things, all I'm saying to you that please don't be anxious. These things happen. I'm not minimizing anything, but I'm just saying you do need to know that these things happen. If since you heard about it a couple of weeks ago, if you feel anxiety, or if you feel a sense of grief, or if you're feeling angry, or if you're feeling upset, or all these things, it's perfectly natural. It's just being human. It's just being a normal Christian. The question is how we deal with it. But these things are... All of this, though, immediately raises a key fundamental question. And that is, in a crisis like this, what do the scriptures say? What does God have to say to us in here? And I immediately take you to Romans. You don't need to turn to it if you don't want to. Romans chapter 4, where Paul writes, what do the scriptures say? In the context there, Paul is writing to the church in Rome, as you know, and he's explaining the relationship between the arrival of Jesus and his kingdom and the Jews and the historic human race. And the way he does this explanation, which is a very good way of doing it, is that he imagines he's talking to somebody. And he asks a question. And it's recorded. So, for example, in chapter 3 of Romans, what advantage? He's talked a bit, and then somebody over there puts their hand up and says, well, hang on, what advantage is there then in being a Jew? That's chapter 3, verse 1. Or what value is there in circumcision? And then he answers it. Yes? And then somebody else over here puts a question, chapter 3, verse 9. What shall we conclude then? So, where do we go with this? And he answers that question. So it's a sort of ding-dong. And then he's talking about Abraham and the forefather of Jews and so on. And then he imagines somebody say, well, what does the scriptures say? And there is gold dust, because he gives us a principle that runs through all our life. What does God, the Holy Spirit, have to say to us through the scriptures? And I want to... So in a sense, what I'm wanting to do just briefly this morning is to step back and look at the bigger picture here. And ask and answer one or two questions. So, and to give you an overview. And so here I have, if you click to the next slide, 5 things to help a church handle a crisis, or in this case, a leadership crisis. Number one. Oh, and let me say, I'm really here talking about principles. Before there's any conversation of who said what and did what to whom, when, where, and why, before we go into any of that detail, let's stand back and look at the principles. What does the scripture have to say to us? Because when this thing, hundreds of years ago when I was younger, I learned to fly with the Royal Air Force in the United Kingdom. And when you fly, you do things called aerobatics, which is really a way of making yourself sick rather quickly. But you flip up, you do a roll or whatever you do, and there's a gyroscope that tells you when you're flying straight and left, and all that goes haywire when you do a somersault in the air. And it takes a moment or two for it to settle down. And it's a little bit like that with a crisis and the emotion and so on. So from the shock and the surprise and all of that, it takes a little while for the gyroscope to settle down. But that's what we're aiming, I'm hoping to help in that process of the gyroscope settling. Because the health and the flourishing and the well-being of God's church, what we call in this instance the Copenhagen Vineyard, is our highest priority. God has called you together, and you've served the Lord together faithfully for many years, and you're going to do so in the future for many years. And we are determined, if nothing else, we are determined that the work that God is doing here shall continue and shall flourish, whatever happens. Yes? Are we agreed? Very good. Okay. Paul said, bidding farewell to the Ephesian elders, Acts chapter 20, shepherds, keep watch over the flock of which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. And that's the task, particularly of those of you who are pastors in the church or the leaders of the the very handsome. I must say, you are a handsome race, aren't you? I mean, look at the photographs up there, the various leaders of the small groups. You're very beautiful people. So, number one, leaders, let me say to you, leaders are held to the highest standard. Leaders, there you go. Leaders are held to the highest standard. There's a classic, don't bother to turn to it, but in 1 Timothy chapter 3, Paul is writing to Timothy, who's at the time leading the church in Ephesus. And many of you will know it. It's a classic case where he talks, among other things, he talks about the criteria, the standards that leaders should, all of us should aspire to, but particularly leaders. And I, if you recall, chapter 3, he starts, he uses the phrase, and I'm not sure quite how it translates into Danish, but above reproach. That's where he starts, that leaders should be above reproach. In other words, that their conduct should be, as given that they're human beings, but overall the pattern of their life is not open to criticism. That's where he begins, chapter 3, verse 2, and then at the bottom of the paragraph, you'll notice, he ends, verse 7, with, they should have a good reputation with outsiders. In other words, people outside the church, never mind people inside, people outside the church shouldn't look at a leader and say, Anna, she shouldn't, well, we know far too much about Anna, she shouldn't be a pastor in this church. What on earth do you think? You see? And it's outsiders. No, that is not the case with Anna. My only point is that it's like above reproach, verse 2, and good reputation with outsiders, verse 7. It's like these are bookends on a bookshelf. And in between those, you have, do you remember the number of those instructions? Husband of one wife, not a drunkard, not, do you remember there's a whole list of them? But the point that one of the points that Paul is making is that the reputation of the church, the reputation of the leaders, the reputation of the church is tied up with the reputation of the Lord. So the point I'm making is these things are important. Reputation and credibility is important. And in the Vineyard, we hold that very precious and it's very important to us. All of which, with the various things that are talked about, you know, husband and one wife, children behaving themselves, not in debt, you know, do you remember all that list? That it, the implication underneath that is that leaders should be scrutinized, because you can only arrive at the conclusion that they meet the criteria, if they've been scrutinized. Now, it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that you scrutinize everybody. But you join this church on the assumption, according to Paul writing to Tim, you join this church, don't you, on the assumption that somebody scrutinized them and said, yes, they qualify the criteria. You'd be daft to join this church if you didn't assume that. If you assume nobody scrutinized anybody, I mean, why would you do that? Got it? Great. So that implies that on the part of leaders, there is an accountability. There is an openness. Somebody, in order to do the job I've done, some way in the past and more recently, I get scrutinized. Well, John, that means you lose some of your privacy. It does. But that's what happens. That's part of the cost of being a leader. Because we believe in the Vineyard, we believe in openness and accountability and disclosure and transparency. So you can come and you can have a look at my bank account at any time you like. You can talk with my wife about my neighbor. You can search my, what is it, internet, you know, Google, and see what I've been, you know, there has to be this openness. And it's very, this is the principle I'm establishing of how we work with leaders. Nothing to do with this case, this particular case. I'm just saying the principle is how we operate. Next thing, number two. Let me also assure you that everybody in this current situation, everybody is doing their very best. I've been involved with it now for just over 2 weeks. And I've seen it firsthand. And I can tell you, I know what I'm talking about. Because around the vineyard, around the world, this isn't the first time, as I say, and it won't be the last, I fear, that we've had these sorts of things where we've had to address difficult, painful, embarrassing things with people. But that's what we're called to do. And I'm talking about the advisory group here, the advisory board, I'm sorry, with Carsten and Christian and Fleming, there he is. T'other Fleming, as we call him. Not the real Fleming. I'm talking about Simon and Anne, who are, as I say, leaders of Denmark. They have, I promise you, I'm also talking about your leadership team, your pastors, with Anne and Maria and others. And we've watched them, we've talked together over hours, emails, and so on and so forth. Everybody is trying to do their best, and in particular, the three groups I've mentioned have been and are outstanding. So I want you to know, I can tell you that because I'm a foreigner and an outsider. But that's my assessment. I've watched this over many, many years with different groups. And, you know, I know it when I see it. But these things, you need to know, these things are difficult. There's no getting around it. They are difficult. They're incredibly challenging for any of us. Why, John, why is it so difficult? Well, for several reasons, but partly you're dealing with legitimate and real tensions. So when somebody, as has happened, somebody brings what the Bible calls an accusation, the person who brings that accusation must be taken seriously, if they're judged to be serious and not malicious or flippant. Must be taken seriously. So there are certain concerns around that. Equally, the person to whom the accusations are focused, that person needs to be. And the whole thing, and I'll come on to it in a moment, needs to be fair and just and impartial. I'll come at that in a moment. But all I'm saying is, how do you, for all of us, it's difficult, particularly when there's the emotion of the crisis. It's very difficult to get it. I've done a number of these things over the years. I haven't yet come across a single one that was perfect. I'll say that again. I haven't yet come across one that is perfect. I don't know there is such a thing as perfect. Because you're dealing with people and with... So on the one hand, you're wanting to be fair to both sides, and some want a lot of publicity, and some want, you know, openness, and some don't. It's complicated. Okay, if I hold out my arm like that and put my right arm from the elbow vertical, the only reason that my arm now is vertical and I can hold it is because I've got a set of muscles here. I think in English they're called biceps, and they're pulling like mad in this direction. And then I've got another set of muscles under here called, I think, the triceps. And they're pulling equally hard, but in the opposite direction. And it's a result of that tension that I can hold this thing. If only one set worked, it would either be that or that. Yes? That's what we're talking about. And it's very difficult to get those tensions right, believe me. For all sorts of reasons I won't bother you with now. But you'll try... So you have the concerns of the complainant on the one hand and the people subject to the allegations on the others. How much information do you give to the church? Because it's family. But so you want information. On the other hand, you know, with any investigation, any criminal investigation, and not that this is criminal, but any criminal investigation, you know, with your police force, there are certain things, once somebody has been charged, there are certain things, by law, they're not allowed to say. And you've seen that. Because the interests of justice, and the person is innocent till proved guilty. Am I making sense? That's for some of the reasons. Then you've got compastoral concerns, and all I'm saying to you, it's a nightmare. how do you craft a statement that is disclosing, but not inappropriately disclosing? It's very difficult. And how do you use language that... you know, is the right sort of language as opposed to the wrong sort of language, and the emphases and the nuances, you know as well as I do. So, all I'm saying to you is, in my opinion, and it is a matter of judgment, everybody is doing their very best. Next, number three, a just and fair process is required. Let me take you to 1 Timothy, again, back to Timothy, and chapter 5 and verse 19. Don't entertain an accusation against an elder, leader, small group leader, pastor, overseer, national director, whatever you call them, unless it's brought by two or three witnesses. But those elders who are sinning, you are to reprove before everyone so that others may take warning. I charge you, and then Paul turns serious. He says, I charge you in the sight of God and of Jesus Christ and of the elect angels. So he's pulling rank, would you agree? You know, this is heavy lifting. Yep. And I charge you to keep these instructions without partiality and to do nothing out of favoritism. Why do you think he ends like that? Because, exactly, it's perfectly natural, if you're talking about another leader who's a friend, it's perfectly natural to lean in their direction. That's all right, that's human, normal. But he says, by all means, be friends, but you must be impartial and not show favoritism. And that's hard and that's costly and painful for people even in this room. Am I making sense? So all I'm saying to you, the beauty of this is the scriptures help us here. Because this is designed by Paul as a protection for the church. So on the one hand, you don't have people popping up and saying, oh, it happened relatively recently in the UK, where a pastor of a husband and wife were pastoring a very wonderful church were accused of going to somebody's house and raping them. I mean, so it was investigated, of course, because it was potentially a criminal matter. The police were involved, and we handled it as best we possibly could, and they investigated, and in this instance, nothing to do here, but in this instance, it was perfectly clear to everybody, including the police, very, very soon, that the person we're talking about was severely ill mentally. And again, we perfectly understand that, but do you see the point? That's not fair if all that went public instantly. Equally, if there, and you all know your history around the world, God seems to be cleaning house in the church. And there are people who have misbehaved. And it has been brushed under the carpet. And that's wrong. And that should, so you see, this is a protection both for leaders that they don't have false accusation, but also a protection for the flock that if there is a problem, it'll be dealt with in a way that's impartial and not subject to favoritism. Very important. There must be a process. So the implication here, there has to be a process, is what Paul is saying, reading between the lines, and it needs to be characterized by fairness. In the vineyard, all of us are accountable, and that's particularly true of leaders in the vineyard. We want to act with integrity and transparency and accountability. So just for clarity's sake, let me emphasize that at this point, Fleming is deemed to be innocent. At this stage, it is an allegation. It goes through stages, but at this point, it's an allegation or an accusation, using Paul's language to Timothy, that's been received and must be researched. Now, there's always, I perfectly understand, there's always, we have a saying in English, no smoke without fire. So there's always a saying, well, maybe this is. And all I'm saying to you is, I beg you to reserve judgment on that until the process has been completed. So just for clarity, the only reason he stepped aside and took what is technically leave of absence is in order for the investigation, because you can't remain in post, and again, you know this from the world you live in, you can't remain in post if you're also being investigated. It's just too difficult for everybody. Which is why he is, Clenning is, and he remains, you call it the leading pastor or the senior pastor of the Copenhagen Vineyard. Since this is an investigation stage, but not, and hopefully never will be, a disciplinary one. But we don't know. And I don't know, and you don't know. Yes? Are you with me so far? How are we doing for time? What time do you normally start? 2:30? 2:45? You what? Thank you. She did say 3 o'clock. So that's fine. I submit to my elders and betters. Number four. Here's the fourth thing I want to say to you. This is a test for all of us. It's a test for the Copenhagen Vineyard as to how you're going to handle this, how you're going to respond to it. For bits that you are responsible for and for bits you aren't responsible. You're not responsible, most of you are not responsible for the process. You can't all be. But we have a process. So I would say, first of all, don't rush to judgment, despite the temptation to do so. It's okay to hold back and say, do you know, I don't know. They say, don't they, that with some people, the only exercise they ever take is to jump to the wrong conclusion. So just don't do that. It's perfectly okay. I don't have an opinion. I don't know, but I trust the people. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 17. Is it up there? Yes, it is. There you go. Very helpful. The first to speak seems right until someone comes forward and cross-examines them. That's the Bible, ladies and gentlemen. B-I-B-L-E. And in your country and in my country, our legal system is essentially based on that. That there needs to be, so if there are, that's why there are two or three witnesses, not just one. So they can be, well, what actually happened? And give us an account of what happened and how you see it and so on and so forth. And that's fair and that's just. First to speak, you know, how many times have you had in the political world there's been some crisis? And you think, goodness me, how possibly the Prime Minister have done that? And then you hear, oh no, there's another side to this. Two sides of a coin, and all needs to be considered. Partly because, you know, just imagine you were in the position of the person being accused. How would you want to be treated? Well, with fairness and justice. The Lord loves justice. Don't rush to judgment. Be patient. This thing takes time. It has to take time. We wish it could be done instantly, but it can't. So be patient, carry on. Nothing's changed in every other sense. If you're leading a small group, you're still a leader of the small group. Get on and lead. Do what God's called you. And be patient. And talk with your people. Explain to them what's going on. Answer their questions. Personally, I believe in open government insofar as you're free. There's certain things I'm not free to say, of course. Everybody understands that. But that's not secrecy. That's consideration for privacy until such time it's no longer private. Yes? The third thing I want to say to you is test for all of us, but do remember help is at hand. You're not swinging in the wind on your own as a church. There are people around the world who know you and love you and are cheering you on. And are supportive in every way and encouraging. And that's part of the reason that Simon and his wife Anna have been involved. So the way we work, as you probably know this, that in the vineyard family around the world, we really the cutting edge of the vineyard is the local church. That's the top layer, yes? People like you, preaching the gospel, taking care of the poor, feeding the hungry, healing the sick, teaching the Bible, helping people with their marriages, and, yes? That's the cutting edge. Now, as churches in Denmark have done this, and around Nordic and around the world, alongside them to encourage and to strengthen and support and to advise, we say our leaders sometimes, their job is to give direction and occasionally bring correction. That's what leaders do. Give direction. This is the direction we give. Sometimes we get off track, and their job is to bring it back onto track. Yes? So our ecclesiology in the vineyard, or the way we understand things, based on the scriptures, is that we also have, if you have the cutting edge of the local churches, we also, the next level is what we call the national vineyard organization or organism or group, in this case Vineyard Denmark, led by Simon and Anna. So they come along, they don't come to boss, they come to serve and to love and to provide encouragement and support and training and resourcing and all of that. Yes? Now, over and above that, because vineyards are springing up like mushrooms all over the globe, there's a third level, and you notice leadership is a call to downward mobility. You know that, don't you? Leaders serve. And leaders of leaders serve even more. And leaders of leaders of leaders serve even more. That's why I'm doing it this way around. The cutting edge is the church. So you have Vineyard Denmark. And then with all the AVCs around the world, you have what we now call Vineyard Global. Vineyard Global does with the national AVCs what the national AVCs do with their local churches. Do I make sense? And AVC, I'm sorry, Associations of Vineyard Churches. So technically, in each country, there's a gang of churches with its own infrastructure here, and broadly speaking, the vineyard in that nation, maybe it's a better way of putting it. The vineyard family in that nation. Yes? Am I clear? A friend of mine used to say, I trust I make myself obscure. That comes, if you look at it, I haven't got time to go into it now, but if you look at Exodus chapter 18, if you look at Acts chapter 6, where there was growth and there were people, do you remember in Acts 6, the widows weren't getting fed properly, or some of them weren't, so they restructured themselves in order to make that possible. Meanwhile, the apostles and others could carry on doing the job that they were called to do. So it's not one's better than the other, it's just their different callings. And it's not that the leaders of Vineyard Denmark or Vineyard Global are better than anybody else. It's just a different job. That's all. But it is in order to strengthen. You know, Exodus 18, if you've got a spare half an hour, next time you have a bath, you know, just have a look at that. It's very interesting how Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, advised him because he was in danger of having a heart attack. He was working so hard. So you say, well, that's the response. What? The other thing I want to say to you is this. Trust your leaders. If you look at 1 Thessalonians, do we have it there?
Yes.
There we go. This is the Bible, ladies and gentlemen. Respect those who work hard among you, who are over you in the Lord, and who admonish you, that's encourage you, and help you forward and envision you. Hold them in the highest regard and love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. You need to trust your leaders, even with this process. Yes, you may have your own opinions. Yes, you might have done it differently. And if and when you're a leader, do it differently. But until such time, give them the benefit of the doubt. In other words, assume they're doing their best. It won't be perfect. These things, as I said earlier, they never are. They won't be perfect. However, you have good, godly men and women who are doing their utmost. And if you can't trust them, if you can't trust your leaders, we're history. You understand that? Perfectly clear from the scriptures. That part of God's gift of the church is leaders. And without leaders, churches stumble and get into difficulty. Believe you me, I've seen it literally all over the world. Nobody's suggesting the leaders are perfect, but there are standards to which we hold them, and I urge you to trust them, respect them, hold them in highest regard. Does that... I'm hurrying here. Let me just try this on you. Because the clock doesn't say 11:58, it actually says it's 10... Where I come from, it's 10:58. Okay, there we go. That's a good cop-out. So the growth cycle. Look at this. I'll be very quick. Click. We have a level of interaction in the spirit that you know nothing about. And just the mention of the word click brings this. So you start with health. Okay, click. Health leads to growth. Growth or maturity. Think of your hair. If you've got healthy hair, there comes a time when you need a haircut. Yes, just what happens. That's what happens within the spirit. Let's talk about churches. As churches get healthy, so they grow. They go through seasons of growth. Click. Growth leads to change. You know, if suddenly another 50 people, no, let's say, yeah, 50 people join this congregation on a Sunday morning, you'd have to make some changes to squeeze them all in. Yeah, you all know this. For those of you who've been around, you've seen lots of changes in the years that this vineyard has been in operation. It's true of a local church, it's true of a family of churches in Vineyard Denmark, in Vineyard Nordic, around the world. Change is inevitable. I hate going to get my hair cut. You walk in, you sit down in front of a complete stranger, and they do things around the back you have no control over. You've no idea what they're going to do. It's faith. I keep saying, whenever I go to a hairdresser, I always say, this is like going to church. Because you have to have faith. They don't understand. Click. Change leads to challenge. All of us know, you know what it's like. Change. What? What do you mean, change? It's always been like this. The last seven words of the church are, we never did it this way before. That's... Change leads to challenge. We all know that. And even with the situation in this current situation, there's an element of change going on, at least temporarily. And that makes us, there's change, or there's, because Fleming has stepped aside. And there are these other people who are doing things. Do you know, understand it's change? All of us get a bit wobbly with that. Perfect understanding, it's a challenge. Click. The choice then is, am I going to trust God or not? If I trust God, click, that leads to obedience, which in itself leads to health. Last point, and with this I will promise you I'll finish. I want to say this to you. Don't forget, will you, that God is on the throne. God is on the throne. God is on the throne. I love the book of Revelation. And there I quoted a bit of it, chapter 4, verses 2 and 9 and 11. There before me was a throne in heaven with someone sitting. It wasn't a vacant throne. There was someone in charge sitting on it. And... the elders are worshipping, falling down to him before him who sits on the throne and worships him forever and ever. This is from the book of Revelation where, I'm sure you know it, just imagine that you have a doorway with a keyhole. And it's as if the Apostle John comes and sticks his eye up to the keyhole and he looks into heaven. God gives him a glimpse into glory. And as if peeping through, and you know the book of Revelation, it's full of fantastic imagery and vivid symbols and pictures. And it's a spectacular account of indescribable things that John is trying to describe. Because he's out of his depth when it comes to language. And what does he see? He sees God is on the throne. The center of the universe, the command center, the headquarters, the nerve center, but the cosmic headquarters of the universe, right at the center, is God on the throne. God's in charge. God, the one with God who governs the world, whose authority is overarching, who, if he wasn't sitting on the throne, you and I would not even be able to take the next breath that you've just taken. So here is John right at the center on the throne, not at the periphery, not near God sitting helplessly on the sidelines, unable to do something as chaos reigns in Denmark or London or whatever. No, 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 no. No, 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 he is in control. And you know that the doctrine of God's being in control is sometimes called the providence of God. Hi. And I finish with this. The Baptist preacher in the 19th century in London is a man called Charles Spurgeon, you may have heard of. He was profoundly influenced the development of the what we now call the Baptists. He says, "We are not waifs and strays upon the open sea of fate, but we are steered by God's infinite wisdom towards a desired destination. Providence is a soft pillow for anxious heads." Providence is a soft pillow for anxious heads. And I urge you, individually and together, to put your head on the soft pillow of God's sovereign grace and kindness.
Tak fordi du lyttede med. Vi håber, at du går herfra med fred i hjertet og mod på mere. Du kan finde mere fra København Vineyard på Facebook, Instagram og vores hjemmeside. Og du skal vide, at du altid er velkommen i vores kirke på Nyvej 7. Vi håber, at du får en god dag.